Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer, a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder, and so that's what we explore on this podcast. Today, we're going to be looking at this idea of what happens when students solve authentic problems within the PBL framework. So it's all about this idea of sort of problem-driven PBL, and it's part of this series that we've been doing on project-based learning. So let's go ahead and dive right in. In the 1980s, someone decided that haircuts were way too messy, and they are. So they combined a hair trimmer and a vacuum cleaner, and we ended up with the Flowbee. Now, I remember begging my parents for a Flowbee, and they said no because they thought I would use it on the dog, and they were right. But the idea is pretty clear that you can solve problems in unique ways. Now, while the Flowbee might not be the greatest product ever invented, something pretty cool happens when students create their own Flowbee-like products. They learn how to solve problems. Real problems, the kinds of problems that are rooted in actual context. Now, their products might not change the world, but the process will change their world. Over time, they will learn how to think divergently as they find unique solutions to complex problems, and they're using limited resources to do it. So they're looking at the complexity of problems, and they're solving problems with the limited resources that they have. In other words, they'll see the value in creative constraint, and they'll kind of learn how to think inside the box in order to think outside the box. Here, students will engage in systems thinking and collaboration, metacognition. You get the idea. And they'll grow into makers and creative thinkers. They'll embrace an entrepreneurial mindset. They'll become self-directed, and they'll become self-managers. Now, don't get me wrong. On the surface, these projects might not look all that impressive. They'll look a lot more like the Flowbee and a lot less like a SpaceX rocket. But that doesn't matter. The important thing is that they will be solving real problems, problems that are real to them. So why do we need real problems? Back when I taught the eighth grade, we had a word problem in our math book, and it asked students to imagine that they were a catcher in baseball, and they needed to use the Pythagorean theorem to figure out the distance from home plate to second base before throwing out a runner. Now, couldn't you just Google that? A kid asked. Why would you? Another one chimed in. Every major league catcher knows the distance is 127 feet and 4 inches. This kid was, by the way, a catcher and kind of a math geek at the same time. And then he said, besides, by the time you Googled it, the runner would be at third base. Now, my students were right. That was a really crappy word problem. And this word problem is an example of what Dan Meyer refers to as pseudo-context in mathematics. It's what happens when students use math in a way that doesn't actually reflect any genuine context. Students are less engaged when they solve irrelevant problems in inauthentic ways. They begin to view the subject as kind of irrelevant, merely another hoop that you jump through in your journey toward college and career. And for what it's worth, I never saw any authentic context myself as a math student when I was in algebra, right? It just didn't seem to fit it, even though there are so many contexts where we do engage in algebraic thinking. But see, I fell in love with statistics back when I was asked to find the standard deviation of certain statistics and then look at the statistical and graphical illiteracy within the news. And this happened in our pre-calculus class. So the teacher basically asked us to find bad examples of statistical illiteracy in our world within these contexts, and he would give us these examples, and I absolutely loved that class. And this is at the idea, this idea of authentic problems is at the heart of problem-based learning. Now, we've been talking about project-based learning, but problem-based learning is actually a learning theory. I would describe project-based learning as kind of a framework, an organizational structure, a philosophy. Problem-based learning is a specific pedagogical model. Now, there's a lot of crossover there, but they are different. You can do problem-based learning and not do project-based learning, and you can do project-based learning and not do problem-based learning. I've created this 5-minute video if you're curious about what problem-based learning means. But what I want to focus on is this idea of combining problem-based learning and project-based learning. So although problem-based learning is different from project-based learning, there's often an overlap between the two in the form of problem-driven PBL. The idea here is to start the project process with a problem or challenge that students have to solve. An example might be a maker challenge where you present a specific scenario that leads to students engaging in research and problem solving, ideation, prototyping, and finally sending their work to the world. One of the examples we have is this roller coaster project. Other times it's less of a scenario and more of kind of a specific problem. There's this drone delivery example that sets tight parameters with a specific problem. In this case, it's don't let the package break. That's the specific problem. And students have to figure it out on their own. Now, within problem-driven PBL, teachers will typically begin with specific concept standards, and then they go more loose and open and flexible with the way students actually solve it. So often there's going to be the loose and the tight with the standards in any PBL, and so your loose that you're looking for is, you know, how you solve it. Your tight is going to be what specific concepts do they learn. In this case, you know, it might be forces in motion, it might be something connected to World War II, but they're concepts they're learning by solving the problem. But not every problem-driven PBL project has to include a tangible project. So I want to point out that even though they're creating something, sometimes students design a system or they plan an event. Sometimes their creative work is merely a pitch to a group of judges in the community. There was this thing that I did that was a blog post on standards and PBL, and you can kind of see what I mean by the lineup between the standards and PBL within it. So if you want to take a deeper dive into that, check out that blog post. So I've given two specific examples, and these are physical products, and they're kind of, I'd say they fit in more with like engineering. But the truth is students can do service projects, they can do digital products, work of art, events, all kinds of stuff. And so I want to talk about what it actually looks like in different subject areas. So the first one is social studies. Students can engage in service learning projects that focus on finding specific problems in their communities and developing solutions. They might do simulations like brokering peace or solving an environmental problem. They might go and do this economic project where they solve a consumer problem. They might do Shark Tank style pitches to entrepreneurs in the community. There are all kinds of different options in social studies where they are solving a problem and then sending something to an audience as a result. How about science? In science, students might do something like an engineering challenge, which is what I kind of mentioned before, and that's one option. They could also do one that specifically gets into biomimicry. Now, I just recently did a post on biomimicry. You could check that out if you're interested in, you know, what it looks like to engage in biomimicry, but that's another example. They might create their own problem that they want to test in this sort of Mythbuster style project, and that's another option. In math, students might be given an authentic challenge like finding the most efficient routes for a new subway system. I'm thinking of like the transportation, not the place where you get a foot long. Or they might do a choose your own problem by looking at project by looking at a situation and then developing their own problems. That's kind of a cool math thing that, again, connects to Dan Meyer. They might also do something like the Tiny House Project. And again, you can check that out. I have the specific Tiny House Project if you're interested in that. In reading, so in ELA, after reading a series of novels during SSR, students could solve the problem which novel deserves to become a film adaptation. Or they might create their own literacy campaign by creating preview videos for books. Students could also engage in informational reading and research after they look at a specific challenge or problem. So there's a lot of different options here. The key idea is the problem-driven PBL looks different with each grade level. Younger students might need simpler problems and additional scaffolds, but they have a hidden advantage. They could be fearless often when coming up with solutions, and they often have a greater endurance in fixing their mistakes and trying things out when they fail. Sometimes kids who are older have kind of gotten over that, and that's really too bad. Meanwhile, secondary students have the advantage of just more background knowledge and better skills. I can do things at a more complex level without needing quite so much help. A great litmus test to see if your problem is good enough is asking the question, do you want to solve that problem? Does it nag at you? Does it excite you? You can even present that to the students and see what they say. If it's easy to walk away from the problem, chances are it's not that great of a problem to begin with. But if you find yourself coming back to that problem over and over and over again, it's often the start of a great problem-driven PBL project. I want to end with a story. A few weeks ago, I got the opportunity to work with a school in Winnipeg on this two-day design challenge. Some of the students went through the Create a Sport Challenge, while others designed a pinball machine. And in both cases, they were given the challenge of creating their products using limited supplies. So they had to think divergently. One teacher even framed the problem this way. How will you design something hands-on and active that will be so compelling that students would choose to play it rather than being on their devices? So compelling it takes people away from their devices. Now, some of the students started out skeptical. A pinball machine with cardboard and duct tape? Are you kidding me? Really? How is this going to help me get into college? And how would I use it in a career? And how does this connect to real rigorous learning? But as the day progressed, some of these same students experienced something unexpected. Struggle. They were having a hard time. It wasn't easy. There was no formula. See, traditional schooling tends to focus on getting the right answer and getting it as fast as you can. But problem solving forces students to work through iterations slowly with tons of mistakes. Though they can get frustrated and a few students will even get angry, these students were more engaged. As I walked the hallway at the end of the day, I noticed a buzz of excitement that I didn't anticipate. Students talked about things that they were going to solve at home and bring in. And again, I want to point this out. They were talking about doing homework for fun. That is crazy. Now, through these 2 days, I watched teachers facilitate student collaboration, problem solving, and creativity. And they did a phenomenal job. I noticed students who began as skeptical becoming more and more excited about what they were learning. The creative constraint forced them to solve real problems in unique ways. And to me, that's what it's all about. Hey, thank you for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. If you enjoy this show, would you leave a review? Just click on the star things on iTunes or on Stitcher. And maybe say a comment if you want. You don't have to. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.